All right, we're catching up with some racing royalty here at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame. Past inductee and three-time Indianapolis 500 winner, Johnny Rutherford. Johnny, thank you for taking the time, and it's an honor to talk to you. Welcome to Knoxville. I'm sure you're looking forward to all the festivities this weekend.
Oh, definitely. It's this is a tribute to racing. It's got cars here that date way back to the almost the beginning of sprint car racing, and it's been fun to walk around and look at and remember and some of the things that I was involved in and got to do while I was racing.
Well, let's talk about I don't know if I've ever really heard how you got into racing. What kind of inspired you to start to being a race driver?
Well, it all goes back to right after World War II. In 1945, the war was over, and midget car racing suddenly became very exciting, and the fans loved to go out, big crowds, to watch the midgets run. And my dad took me to the track, and I got to see the cars run, and I was probably seven or eight years old, or is in that area. Anyway, I was hooked. I wanted to be a race car driver when I grew up, and someday maybe I'll make it.
Well, I think you did. Was your dad a race driver, or were your family involved in racing at the time?
My dad was military, and he was an aircraft engine mechanic, and was one of the best, I've been told, by mechanics that worked with him. And anyway, he had a midget. Back then, it was before the Curtis Craft midget, which was very modern looking and was what it was. And then you'd go to the wrecking yard and get a set of Model A or Model T frame rails and some steel tubing and make cross members and build your own midget and put a couple of front fenders together to make the tail and whatever it took. But anyway, it was exciting, and I have a 1946 Curtis Craft V8-60 flathead Ford midget that I'm restoring.
Do you remember your first race as a driver, and how it went and everything?
How could you forget? I was in a hot rod club in River Oaks, my town where I live, and it was in the 40s or the 50s, late 50s. Anyway, I was in the club, and we had a meeting, our normal meeting night, and one of the guys says, "I'm going to have to leave early. I got to help my brother put the engine in his dirt track car." That set me straight up in my chair. Dirt track car? Yeah, they run every Friday night over at Dallas, Texas at the Devil's Bowl Speedway. So I went out the next day, and they let me drive the car, and I should have had a tetanus shot before I drove it. But anyway, it was incredible, and I immediately started searching for and found a 32 Chevrolet coupe sitting in a shut down service station in Grapevine, Texas, and I bought it and towed it back to the clubhouse or to where we had our club, and the guys helped me build my first race car in 1958, and I started racing in 1959.
Now, obviously, every driver remembers their first win. Where was that, and how long did it take you to get that first win?
Well, win was a win, and I won a heat race, and I was thinking about that not long ago, and that's the first professional money that I received, and it was $2.65, as I recall, was for winning the heat race at the Devil's Bow.
I think they pay a little bit more now to win heat races. But, you know, as we're talking to a three-time Indianapolis 500 winner, Johnny Rutherford, you know, as we go through, you know, when did you figure out that, hey, I'm pretty good at this. Maybe I can, you know, maybe I will make a career out of it.
No, I wanted to do it, period. That was it. You know, I wasn't thinking, I'm pretty good at this. No, that didn't show up till later. So it was, and I just enjoyed racing, and I made some money at it, and it was, you know, a lot of, not only a lot of fun, but it was what I did for a living.
Your first big break, where was that, and who, what owner, driver, car was that with?
You know, I'm not sure I remember. I raced sprint cars in IMCA. And you probably couldn't name a county fair or free fair or state fair in the Midwest. It's got a half-mile dirt track that I haven't run on. And that was the training ground. That was where you learned what you needed to know about driving a high-speed race car.
Let's fast forward now. When you got the call to race at Indianapolis, what was that like, and was it like, okay, I'm great, I'm kind of in the big time now?
Well, yes. It all actually started, I was running IMCA and was home for the winter. You know, racing was closed down. And I had a call from a friend in Dallas, had a Pontiac dealer over there. And he says, do you think you'd ever like to run the Daytona 500? And I'm going to say, no. Are you kidding me? Yes, I would. He said, come on over here, and my friend's building a new car, and he wants to talk to you. So I went over to Dallas, and he called his friend up and talked with him for a minute and said, yeah, he's right here, I'll put him on. He handed me the phone and said, here, talk to Smokey Unick. My God, I nearly dropped the phone. And he said, you want to come down here and drive my car? And I said, not knowing why, but yes, sure, yes. How soon can you be here? I said, I'll be there tomorrow. and I packed up and drove to Daytona, and it turned out to be the fastest car in the garage, and I set a new track record at Daytona and a world record, and won my first race that to ever run in at Daytona in the NASCAR ranks. Anyway, that was what launched me. Smokey asked me if I'd like to stay there and run with him, and I said, Smokey, I want to go to Indianapolis. And he was he knew Indianapolis very well. It was a challenge for him, and he loved it. So anyway, that was how I took the advantage of a situation and got a chance to get a team. I had a team ask me to drive for them, and that was it.
I believe 1964 was your rookie year at Indy?
1963.
What was that like? What was just being a rookie at Indianapolis? Obviously, it's different now than it was then. What was that like, just, you know, kind of learning how to drive around that place?
It was, you know, it's different. You know, it's like any racetrack. You know, Daytona is different. And so you just go out and do what you can do and, you know, figure out what it's like and where you have to run. And they have guys that take rookies out and show them the racetrack and the line around it and everything. And, it was quite an experience. the car that I originally signed up for turned out to be not that good. It was a new Watson Roadster, but it had been crashed the year previous in Milwaukee and obviously not put back together properly. But anyway, I did finally get a ride in Ed Kostinek's. He bought one of the leader card Watson Roadsters, and it was a good car. So anyway, yeah, that was my first year, and got in the race and didn't last very long, 30 or 40 laps, and it sprung an oil leak into the clutch, and that was it.
Did that experience tell you, okay, I want to come back here and do this again?
Oh, yeah, certainly. Yes, I ran sprint cars every weekend and championship cars on, the weekends that they ran. So, yeah, it was an experience to, know what to do and how to do it, and you learn. Every time you get in the car, you go out, you learn something. So,
took you a few years to get that first win, but in 1974, and you had to come from the back of the field almost.
I had some help on that. Herb Porter, who was a mechanic at the Speedway, I had driven for a couple of years, and he knew that McLaren had been there and struggling a bit, but I had driven for him, and he knew my abilities, and so he got in contact with Teddy Merritt at McLaren, and we arranged a meeting, and I signed up for that next year, and thank goodness, because that was quite an experience. It was a fast race car, the M16, and the history tells what it did, and it was good for me because it fit.
2 years later, you win the shortest 500 because of rain, and you and Foyt looked poised to have a really good battle, but Mother Nature had other plans. But a win's a win at Indy, no matter how long the race goes, I guess.
That is true. That is true. However you win Indianapolis 500, you don't turn it down.
1980, you had that Chaparral and started on the pole. I think I remember asking you several years ago when I talked to you, was that a race that you just thought, okay, if we just stay out of trouble, we just might win this thing, or is it a little bit more complicated than that?
I knew I was going to win it from the green flag to the checkered. That car was incredible. The first ground effects downforce car that, I got to drive it and test it some, and it was, I knew we had the thing. The story about it, we were standing on the grid. The car was on the pole, and Jim Hall, the owner, and Steve Roby, my crew chief, were standing there. And I just happened to see something out of the corner of my eye, and I looked down, and there was a big orange ladybug crawling in circles on my shoulder. And I said, Jim, tell these guys to load up and go home. We just won this thing. Because that was my lucky charm, this ladybug. And it was, it was something.
As you progress through your career, when did you realize, okay, it's time to stop and kind of slow down a little bit?
All of the guys in my group, Foyt, Andretti announced he was going to retire in a year, and Al Unser and Bobby Unser and all my guys, all me. And I decided, hey, it's time. You know, it's getting harder to come up with a good ride with a new owner or something. And anyway, that's the way it was. And just that was it. You know, I decided it was time. Al Unser had announced it the day before, and that was it.
And I remember Foyt gave you one of his cars to do one final lap. What was that like? I know, you and Foyt do have a little bit of, a connection to just about everything racing. Him coming in and says, hey, take one of my cars out, do your final lap to salute the fans.
I walked in to AJ, and I said, AJ, I'm retiring. I said, have you got a car I could take a lap in? And he turned to his mechanic, said, one of these cars ready? And the guy said, yeah. He said, get it ready for Rutherford. He's going to take some laps. And that was it.
What was your relationship with Foyt alike?
We were good friends, but when you get close to Foyt competitively, he rears up and rustles up a little bit. So, yeah, it was different.
Well, Johnny, thank you so much for going down memory lane, and glad you're here in Knoxville, and it's just an honor to talk to you today.
All right, thank you very much. Yeah.